radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
This is PK Subban of the Nashville Predators.
This is Philip Forsberg of the Nashville Predators.
Hi, this is Pete Weber, the Nashville Predators. Welcome to Smashville.
Now, broadcasting live from high atop the WNSR Broadcasting Tower. And against all better judgment, it's time for Predneck Nation Radio.
Everybody loves the soldiers until they come home and stop fighting.
The Renegades of Puck are ready to take you on an all skate around the NHL with all the news and updates you need.
Start playing with some jam in here. Let's go.
And now, here's your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Saulnier.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for another Predneck Takeover of Nashville Sports Radio. That's right, Predneck Nation Radio is on the air. The Renegades of Puck are in the trench this morning. I'm your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Saulnier. Mastrodamas coming up in the second period. Felder in the third period. And each and every one of you out there craving the coverage. So here we are, the day before Game 5. We are on the radio. What was a best of 7 became a best of 5, has now become a best of 3 as the Great Hockey War rolls on. Two victims claimed in the first round, as the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Pittsburgh Penguins have both been eliminated. To be a division winner this season did not equal an easy path through the playoffs. As we have already seen Tampa Bay lose in the first round, we see the Calgary Flames down 3-1 in the first round, the Nashville Predators and the Washington Capitals each tied at 2 apiece in the first round. The best 16 teams in the NHL is no joke as we roll on. Now a best of 3 for the Nashville Predators, and they will have home ice advantage after splitting in Dallas. Game 1 of the series was a 3-2 win by the Dallas Stars in Nashville, then a 2-1 overtime victory by the Preds. Then we head on to Dallas, and it was a 3-2 victory by the Nashville Predators, where they outlasted and held on for dear life against the Dallas Stars. And then it all came crumbling down in the first period of Game 4 as the Preds fall 5-1, and the Dallas Stars even up the series. Take the wild card title off of this Dallas Stars team. They have come ready to play, and they are prepared. And so far, the numbers are proving them to be the better team overall through 4 complete games. So the Nashville Predators perhaps find themselves lucky to come back home for Game 5 against the Dallas Stars, tied at 2 apiece. This will be the 10th meeting of this season between these two teams. And of course, we know that this year is a huge year between the rivalry of the Nashville Predators and the Dallas Stars. And I mentioned it, 10 times already played this year. We could be heading for 11, 12 even this year. And then next season, we'll have the regular season series and the Winter Classic at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. These two teams, if they weren't already big-time division rivals, they most certainly will be after this. I mentioned it already, 10 games already 9 games played between these two teams this season. The Preds in the regular season were 3-2, and in the playoffs so far are 2-2. That's good for a record of 5-4 against the Stars. What will happen in Game 10? That's what we are here to figure out. Game 5 of the playoffs, of course, is one of the most critical games in a series. The team that goes on to win Game 5 usually wins approximately 80% of these series. We've seen it plenty of times before, and we've certainly seen plenty of Game 5s here in Nashville. I do have a positive stat before we get started on the ugliness of Game 4. Under Peter Laviolette, Game 5, recent history. The Nashville Predators, they're 4-4 total. At home, they are 3-1. The only loss in that 3-1 last year, round 2, against the Winnipeg Jets. It was as ugly as it could be. It was a 6-2 loss at Bridgestone Arena. But other than that, the Nashville Predators won 3 other Game 5s on home ice and are 4-4 overall under Peter Laviolette in Game 5. That's the stat I dug out for you. Boyle Simmons, listed as week to week just a couple of days ago, but rumored both players could be back on the ice as early as today for practice. How that will impact the lineup going forward into Game 5, puck drop of 2 p.m. local time, national television on NBC. Going to be a fantastic day. This ugly weather that's come in and cooled the temperatures down, it's all going to be out of here before Saturday afternoon, and it's going to be a fantastic day here in the Music City. Just throw a couple of numbers at you so far in this series. Special teams absolutely being dominated by the Dallas Stars through four games. They are 4 of 19 on the power play, and they've generated 33 shots on goal, while the Preds are 0 of 10 on the power play and have 16 shots on goal. Dallas in the regular season had the 11th ranked power play in the NHL, and the Predators, of course, had the 31st ranked power play. So it's completely understandable why these numbers are working out the way they are. The Preds simply taking way too many penalties in this series. 19 power play opportunities for the Dallas Stars, and what, half of those created by Matthias Ekholm by himself? Shots on goal, the Preds are out shooting Dallas in the series over four games, 137 to 123, but the physical play is certainly in favor of the Dallas Stars, and we have seen them ramp up that portion of their game tremendously. The last two games, the Dallas Stars had 42 hits and 31 hits for the series, 104 hits now. The Nashville Predators have been pretty consistent for all four games. Here's the numbers, 24, 23, 23, 25. That equals 95 hits for the series. So the Preds have been playing consistently physical, and the Dallas Stars have been really ramping that up the last two games. That investment in physical play pays off as the series goes along. And if the Nashville Predators and the Dallas Stars are back here next Wednesday for a Game 7, then we could see how that investment pays off over the course of the series. The Dallas Stars also blocking a hell of a lot of shots in that last game, 31 in total. Now they blocked 84 for the series. The Preds have blocked 74. So the Nashville Predators and the Dallas Stars, it is a best of three. That is what it has come down to. Who is having the success for the Dallas Stars? All the big names. Klingberg leading the team after four games. He's got 5 assists. Zuccarello, a surprise addition for the Dallas Stars, looking to add a little bit of offense, and he's added 3 goals for them in this series. Radulov's got 2 goals and an assist. Ben has a goal and 2 assists. Sagan has a goal and 2 assists. And Ben Bishop rebounded nicely after his Game 3 performance, which was soft. Game 4, to be honest with you, I didn't even know if he was back there the bulk of the game because the Predators really didn't put that much pressure on him. But after four games, he's 2-2 in the series, a 1.98 goals against average, which is just where he was in the regular season, and a 942 save percentage. What those numbers mean is he has stopped 129 out of 137 in the series. And though the Dallas Stars went to the overload 5-man unit and put together their big guns on the top line, they really wouldn't need that strategy for very long in Game 4. Those players, though, are performing at a high level. I cannot say the same for the top guys on the Nashville Predators. When you look at the stats, the team is led after 4 playoff games in scoring by PK Subban with 1 goal and 1 assist. That's right, 2 points after 4 games leads the Nashville Predators. Nick Bonino also has 2 points. Ryan Ellis has 2 points. Kelly Yarncroke has 2 points. Matthias Ekholm has 2 points. Grimaldi, Yossi with 2 points. You see what names are missing right here? I have to go all the way to absolutely last place in the statistical category, and that's something I haven't had to do all year to find this name. Victor Arvidsson, after 4 games played in the playoff, averaging 19 minutes, he has 0 points and has taken 1 penalty in this first round playoffs. Ryan Johansson has only 1 assist, and that comes on a garbage goal. It does break up a shutout for Ben Bishop, but still, 1 assist. It's not going to get it done. And Philip Forsberg, he has 1 goal so far. It was a big goal. It was an impactful goal, but you need more out of your top line, and you need more out of your number 1 and number 2 goal scorers in the regular season. There is absolutely no chance of success if this first line doesn't start contributing and generating some offense moving forward from this point. Tied 2-2 with the first line underperforming and the Preds largely being under siege for the last two games in Dallas. Perhaps the Preds are lucky to be coming back for Game 5 tied at 2 apiece. Need to see some corrections, need to see some adjustments. After 4 games in the playoffs and after 9 games total against this team, you know exactly what you're up against. I'd better see some damn adjustments. You've had 2 days to figure it out between Game 4 and Game 5. Let's go back and talk about Game 4. We don't shy away from the ugliness right here. There are things we can talk about, there are things we can break down, and we're going to do that right now. Game 4 in Dallas just the other night. Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, Granlund, Turris, and Smith. Sissons, Bonino, and Watson. Your fourth line, Salamaki, Yarncroke, and Grimaldi. Yossi and Ellis, Ekholm, Subban, Hamhuis, Fabbro, Pekka-Rinne. Largely, the lineup has remained intact, aside from Boyle and Simmons getting injured during this first round and being replaced by Grimaldi and Salamaki. We go into the game just 2:08 into the first period. Dante Fabbro's got a shot on net from out by the blue line, stopped by Bishop. It's the Predators' first shot on goal of the game. But before the Preds could even start to get their skates under them in this game, at the 3:01 mark of the first period, Ekholm's got a penalty 2 minutes for high sticking, and immediately Hintz is cashing in and giving the Dallas Stars a 1-0 lead. The Preds got to scrambling, and Hintz gets an easy look with the wrist shot from the left circle, and it gets by Rinne. Dallas, a 1-0 lead early in this game on home ice. 4:31 of the first period, Philip Forsberg gets a penalty. 2 minutes for puck over the glass. He's just inside his own blue line in the defensive zone. He puts it diagonally, just trying to dump it off of the half wall in the offensive zone, and he ends up throwing it completely over the glass. Clearly a mistake right here, a preventable penalty, and Philip Forsberg goes to the box and sees Alex Radulov cash in on this power play. Stars won the faceoff. They move it over to Radulov in the slot. He lets a wrist shot go, and it beats Pekka-Rinne 2-0. Dallas Stars in the first 5 minutes of the game. At 5:30, Radulov goes to the box, 2 minutes for roughing. Dan Hamhuis, nice veteran job right here. He was working over Sagan on the half wall and really giving him the business, and Radulov comes in to try to do something about it, throws a punch. Hamhuis draws the penalty. Nice job right there for the Predators. The Dallas Stars had all the momentum in the first 5 minutes. Sissons, good jam in front of the net. Good to see him back on the power play. Maybe he deserves more power play time. I remember at some point in this franchise's history where Colton Sissons was actually a productive player out there on the power play, as opposed to whatever the hell you're putting out there nowadays. Maybe Austin Watson, too. He was once productive in like the 9 seconds of power play time he got in his career. Sissons with the good jam. The Preds generate one shot on net. No conversion. 8:24. Cogliano shot from a sharp angle to create a rebound, and the rebound is an easy finish for Cogliano and the Dallas Stars. And at 8:24, the Nashville Predators have find themselves down by 3 goals and are completely on their heels. At 8:50, Yarncroke's going to the box. 2 minutes for holding, and the only note I put down here is at least Dallas didn't score. That's a positive. 12:03, Ekholm's back in the box again. 2 minutes for high sticking. This was just absolutely careless. He goes for the stick lift, and he hits the Dallas Stars player right in the face. It was an easy call to make, and Mattias Ekholm is just completely out of his mind out there so far in this series. 10 penalty minutes in just under 4 games. We're still in the first period of game 4, and he's already picked up 5 minor penalties in the playoffs. I don't know what the hell is going on with Mattias Ekholm, but I know that he's got to get himself way more under control, because Blake Como is not Claude Lemieux, and Mattias Ekholm is not Brendan Witt. So, get yourself under control out there, Mattias. You're in the box again. Pekka-Rinne comes up with a huge save on Lindell trying to bail you out. But then you're watching Matt Zuccarello get his third of the playoffs. Another wrist shot from the slot. And guess what? Just like that, the Stars now have a 4-0 lead. Pekka-Rinne out. It's a mercy pull. This is not Pekka-Rinne's fault. And if you are blaming this game individually on Pekka-Rinne, you've clearly never listened to this radio show before. UC Saros gets his first action of the playoffs. He's in. Preds look to start settling things down, already down by 4. Not impossible, but certainly a ton of work to be done. 15:46. Foxa, 2 minutes for holding. Fourth line doing good work. Salamaki is hitting everything. Kind of reminded me of Jordan Tutu on this shift, going from one side of the zone to the other side of the zone, finally forcing a turnover. Preds getting a scoring chance and drawing a penalty. Great job. If the Preds power play was ever going to help the Preds start to get back into this thing, right now would be a perfect time. Unfortunately, the Dallas Stars get the best scoring chance on the Preds power play as Hintz hits the post on a shorthanded 2-on-1. 19:41. Preds first line, they get a scoring chance. We go to the end of the first period. Dallas out shooting Nashville 11-10. Pekka Rinne already out of this game, and the Dallas Stars have a 4-0 lead. At 2:48, Saros makes a save on Pitlick on the Stars' 3-on-1 rush in the second period. As you would expect, the Preds are going all out and sacrificing any aspects of defense in an effort to try to get back in this game. The Preds are generating some good pressure because of that style, but the pressure is being generated by Grimaldi, Salamaki, Fabbro, you know, players that are hungry, players that want it. Where are the veterans on this team? Where are the top guys? Why aren't they getting it done out there? Lines at this point start to be switched up because of this type of thing, like it's an open hockey game. I have no idea who was skating with who from the middle of the second period on, but I do know at 10:09, Hintz has got his second of the game and his second of the playoffs. Preds turnover in the D zone leads to a 2-on-1, and that's an easy finish for the Dallas Stars. UC Soros hung out to draw on this one. It's a 5-0 game. We hit the end of the second period. The Preds still out shooting the Dallas Stars 20-19. In the game, but it matters not because that's not the metric we use to count victories. 5:48 into the third, UC Soros, he gets a penalty 2 minutes for a puck over the glass, but then he comes up with a huge save on Klingberg and bails himself out. 8:11 of the third period, Roman Josi's got his second of the playoffs. It was a shot from out high and it beats Ben Bishop. It breaks up the shutout, which gave me just a tiny little bit of satisfaction since I had to sit through this turd of a hockey game, but it does only make the game 5-1, the Dallas Stars still dominating on home ice. And to be completely honest with you, the Dallas Stars, after scoring their fifth goal, for the most part, were willing to trade minutes for shots on goal and scoring opportunities for the Predators. And the Preds really never did anything to get themselves effectively back into this thing. They skated. They finished the game. Josi went to the box at 13:25, but that would be your final. That's the last note. 5-1, Dallas wins this game. The Preds end up out shooting the Stars 35-29 at the end of the night. As bad as it is, though, it's only one game in a best-of-seven series. It's awful. We had to all sit through it. For me, I had to sit through it twice to sit down, take these notes, and now I've got to talk about it on the radio for the second day in a row. This game was awful to watch. Matthias Ekholm is having the worst four-game stretch that I think he has had for the entire season. I don't know what's going on with him. The defense, it fell apart in this game. Too many penalties, not enough effort in the defensive zone, inability to clear pucks, at least unable to make zone exits in a clean way, and that was really frustrating the Nashville Predators. Listen, the Predators have every opportunity to get themselves right back on track, an extra day off, a little bit of extra practice, maybe Boyle or Simmons or both coming back into the lineup for Game 5. We do not know. Rocco Grimaldi cannot come out of this lineup, though. Even in Game 4, as bad as it was, Rocco Grimaldi was one of the bright spots out there on the ice, and while I've been bagging on the first line for the majority of this recap, I do have to give it to Ryan Johansson. We're always screaming, shoot more, shoot more. He ended up generating 8 of the Preds' 35 shots on goal in this game, and he did have an assist on the Josi goal. So Forsberg, Arvidsson, completely missing in this game. I need a huge step up from the first line. I need a huge step up from the leadership group. And Game 5 is a critical moment. Again, I mentioned it to start so we could have something positive to think about. The Nashville Predators on home ice in Game 5 under Peter Laviolette. They are 3-1. The only loss coming in the most recent Game 5, which was against the Winnipeg Jets last year in the second round. I could go through every single one of them if you'd like, but I don't think it's necessary. I've done the work, and I've got the evidence. Speaking of the work and the evidence and the opinions and all of that, coming up next, Mastrodamus in the second period. We're going to start with Pekka Rinne and talk about UC Soros. We're also going to talk about what the Preds need to do to open up Ben Bishop and start putting more pucks in the net. At this point in time, the Nashville Predators are simply not doing a good enough job offensively. We heard that they were going to go on the attack after Game 3 because they were pinned in their own zone and on their heels defensively the entire night. Well, we did not see attack, unless, of course, you're talking about the Dallas Stars. Simply a dominating effort by the Dallas Stars on their home rink. Over the course of a best-of-seven series, the better team always proves itself. For the Nashville Predators, you can have a clunker, you can have a turd, and you can drop one. It ain't the first time, and I'm sure it's not going to be the last time the Preds have one of those type games in the playoffs. What happens next is what matters most. It's a best-of-three, and you've got home ice advantage. Predneck Nation Radio, right here, Nashville Sports Radio. Mastrodamus, he's coming up next in the second period.
This is Ryan Johansson of the Nashville Predators. Welcome to Smashville. Keep listening to Predneck Nation Radio, or you will be body checked.
Predneck Nation, you're right. It's Predneck Takeover, Nashville Sports Radio. The Renegades puck all in the trench this morning. We got the fire. We got the fury. We've got the passion. If you do too, then I certify you on this day. An official Renegade of Puck, jump in the trench with us live on game days at 5 or whenever the Predneck takeovers need to happen. And this Friday morning, a takeover was indeed deemed necessary. You can always find us on Twitter at Predneck Nation. Give us a like on Facebook. You can get us in an on-demand podcast way through SoundCloud and iTunes. And remember, always over the air through all of these fantastic signals, 560 AM and 95.9 FM all around Nashville. And also on 107.9 as you're headed down through Smyrna into Murfreesboro. 103.9 FM through Clarksville into Drakesboro, and we continue building the Nashville Sports Radio Network, and Predneck Nation Radio is going to be a huge part of that. Already doing approximately 100 shows a year. We'll go ahead and see how much we can expand that as the network expands moving forward. I am your host and Captain Crazy Charlie Sonia. Welcome in Predneck Nation Radio, here to talk to me about all things Nashville Predators hockey. He is the starting goaltender of Predneck Nation. He is, of course, a man so far ahead in the future. He's going to tell you everything that's going to happen with Game 5 on Twitter at GreekGoalie35. He is Mostradamus. How you doing today, my friend?
Charlie, I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. Mostradamus, let's just start and get your basic thoughts. The Nashville Predators come back now. What was a best of 7 became a best of 5 and now is a best of 3. But the Nashville Predators, after dropping Game 1 on home ice and then dropping Game 4 in the fashion that they did, I don't feel a lot of confidence out of the fan base, and I feel one bounce away from being down 3-1 in this series. The Preds, are they lucky to come back home for Game 5 tied at 2 apiece?
Incredibly fortunate, considering that effort that they've put together in Dallas over the last two games. I mean, let's be pretty honest. Game 1, you play 25 minutes of hockey, so you deserve to lose that game. Game 2, you're an overtime bounce away from being down 2-0 on home ice. Look at teams like, I don't know, Winnipeg was down 0-2, and now they're obviously fighting for their lives. Tampa Bay lost 0-2. They got swept, so very fortunate that they weren't down 0-2. Game 3, completely bailed out by Pecorine and the Swiss cheese goaltending of Ben Bishop in Game 3. Zero reason they should have won that game. Just not a good enough effort. So I'm thinking Game 4, let's win one for Rene. He bailed us out. Let's go out there and put forth a good effort. And instead, they leave him hanging out to dry. It was just shameful performance in Game 4. So are they lucky to be 2-2? Absolutely. I mean, considering they probably put together a grand total of maybe 60 minutes of hockey in four games, I would say the Preds incredibly fortunate to be down or to be even in this series 2-2.
Mostradamus, I saw a lot of people when Pecorine got pulled, and I hate the word pulled being used in this particular scenario, because this was more of a being relieved of the horrible effort that was happening out there in front of him. Pecorine absolutely hung out to dry in this game. 3 power play goals against the Nashville Predators, a parade to the box led by Matias Ekholm. But talk to me about why we should not blame Pecorine for this one, and why him being relieved when he was relieved had nothing to do with his individual performance, but overall was a totally different concept.
Yeah, it's one of the situations where if you look at Game 7 last year against Winnipeg, after he gives up 2 early goals, that was being pulled. He had 2 just awful, awful goals given up in that, and you saw him kind of slouching all the way down the tunnel, basically, because he knew it was on him. This one, not on him. Look at where Dallas was scoring those goals from. Yes, they're on the power play, but all 3 power play goals came from within about 15 feet of the net with nobody on the guy. I mean, you're supposed to be protecting your net, and Dallas just shooting away and having guys wide open in the slot area, that's terrible. I'm sorry. As good as the penalty killing has been for the first 3 games, that was atrocious watching this team try to defend the Dallas Stars. Now, granted, Dallas has a very dangerous power play, but this was not being scored by their top guys, Ben, Sagan, Radulov. Radulov got 1, yes. They scored 5 goals against you, and Ben, Sagan, and Radulov combined for just 3 points, or 2 points, rather. So it was the depth guys for Dallas pulling the pucks in the net and generating chances and putting you down in 4-0 after one period. So embarrassing performance in front of Rene. Again, like I said, shameful that they played that way, considering what he did for them in Game 3.
UC Soros sees his first action of the playoffs. He gets about 45 and a half minutes in this game. Ends up stopping 20 out of 21, the one that he gave up. The Dallas Stars, nice job on that. Sharp angle shot, intentional rebound, and the rebound was easy to put into the wide open net. No defender gets back quick enough to pick up stick, body, or anything to prevent that from happening. So effectively a 2-on-1, then they remove UC Soros, and then it's a 1-on-empty net situation right there. I thought UC Soros played pretty good, Mastrodamas, but it's not like the Dallas Stars were throwing everything at him. That final 30 minutes or so, they pretty much were willing to trade minutes for shots on goal for the Predators.
Yeah, it's a shame that we're talking about UC Saros because he's not getting any starts. So we keep talking about it in the playoffs when Laviolette is pulling Rene, either due to ineffectiveness by him or the rest of the team. So Saros is getting experience, but unfortunately most of his experience in the playoffs has been in garbage time one way or the other. So I liked what I saw out of him. He didn't seem nervous at all. Of course, he's got Stanley Cup final experience from 2 years ago as well. So he played solid. I don't think this is a question of, oh, is he going to start Game 5? That's absolutely not the case. Pekka Rinne was not to blame, so Rinne will be back in there for Game 5.
Mastrodamas, Matthias Ekholm, he has been so reliable out there on the ice. He has been so good throughout the regular season, one of the Predators' most consistent players. Since this playoff series has begun, though, I do not know what is going on with him. Blake Como is certainly not Claude Lemieux, and Matthias Ekholm is certainly not Brendan Witt, but the way they are playing against each other, it seems that way. You talk about after four games, not even four complete games, three games in a period, Matthias Ekholm, 10 penalty minutes in the series, and he is absolutely out of control out there and out of his mind like we have never seen from him throughout his career. He has moments, he has fights, he goes after guys sometimes, but we've never seen him this out of sorts.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with Ekholm. I don't know if it's a personal issue and he's got to get himself recentered, but we've always said on this show, particularly this season, that he's probably been the most consistent defenseman on this roster for the entirety of the season. And I don't know what is up with him right now, but he has been awful out there. I don't mind saying it. We call out guys all the time. He's got to be better. If he's going to continue to play that way, not only is minutes going to decline, but the chances of the Preds advancing are going to decline dramatically if he doesn't get his game right, because it's been bad watching him out there, and I almost feel bad calling him out. It's like he's been so good all year and so good and so underrated the last few years, but he's going to have to do something to get himself recentered, because that kind of performance is not going to cut it. I understand he may be frustrated at whatever it is, whether it's personal or whether it's in the locker room, but we need him to be Matthias Ekholm of the regular season if this team has any chance of advancing.
Mosh, 47 penalty minutes in 80 games in the regular season, 10 penalty minutes in just three games and half of a period. I don't know what's going on. Somebody needs to have a conversation with him. It's not like the Preds have the option of benching one of their top four defensemen. Right now, if Peter Laviolette had a better go-to option than that, he would probably go to it for a game just to settle things down. But the Predators are going to continue to put Ekholm out there. Obviously, if he didn't get benched in either of the games where he's taking all these penalties, then he's not going to get benched. Mastrodamas, this first line completely absent from the series. Is this the fact that the Dallas Stars are doing something that's shutting them down, or has the first line just completely gone ghost on us here in the first four games of the playoffs?
Well, I just think the Preds just haven't been good enough the first four games. Like I said, I mean, they put together a pretty good performance in Game 2, and that was, and they needed overtime to win that game. So they just got to be better. They have to work harder. Dallas makes it incredibly difficult to get to those high danger areas. I've talked about it all series long for four games. How many really great saves have we seen Ben Bishop make? He hasn't really had to do anything. He's had a couple rebounds that he just stays square in his butterfly stance, and he just sits there, and that's all he does. He hasn't had to be sprawling around like an octopus out there, like Pecorino we've seen before, and it's just not good enough. They've got to get in those high danger chances. That's what this top line thrives on. They thrive on that cycle and getting open area on the ice and getting shots generated that way. When Ryan Johansson has 8 shots on goal, as much as I like seeing him take shots, that's probably a bad thing, though, because we need to get that balanced out more. Johansson should be the distributor to get those pucks to the snipers, Arvidsson and Forsberg, and get them going. But Not good. They've got to be better than that. Again, Dallas, very tight structure under Jim Montgomery, something we are not used to seeing. But right now, the Preds just got to work harder. It's simple as that.
I'm living in Predators bizarro world when Victor Arvidsson has one shot on net, Philip Forsberg has zero shots on net, Ryan Johansson has eight shots on net, and the players that look the most hungry and the most effective for the Predators are Mika Silomaki, Dante Fabbro, and Rocco Grimaldi out there on the ice. Mastrodamus, I need to see a better effort across the board from this team. The third line that was so effective last year against the Colorado Avalanche has essentially been invisible in this thing. The second line came up with a game winner, but that was against regular season Ben Bishop. Bishop and anybody could have come up with the game winner in that one, and you just chronicled what's going on with the first line. I like the way that they just went kind of open hockey style towards the end of game four and just let everybody skate with everybody just to see if maybe some instant chemistry would develop or maybe some guys would take a deep breath and just get back to basics out there on the ice. You know what happens when you start switching players around. Sometimes that is what you like to call a refocus, a recentering moment. And for the Nashville Predators now, they have an extra day off. We're hearing the potential, though we were told just a couple days ago of week to week, Boyle and Simmons perhaps will be on the ice later this morning. Could potentially one or both be available for game five? We all know when it comes to injuries at this time of the year, the week to week thing could have been true. It could have been a rumor. They're available for game five could have been a total rumor and just a misdirection. Mastrodamus, it's game five. The Nashville Predators under Peter Laviolette, they have had success on home ice. They are 3-1, the only loss coming last year in the second round against the Jets, 6-2, 4-4 all time since Peter Laviolette's come here in game fives. Tons of playoff experience versus the Dallas Stars, who all the numbers show that they've been the better team through four games. But experience in this best of three moving forward should prove something very valuable for this Nashville Predators team. Again, under Laviolette, 3-1 on home ice in game fives, eight total game fives, and everybody knows the daunting statistic that comes with this one. The team that wins game five usually wins approximately 80% of those series. Mastrodamus, with those thoughts in mind, the recent history in mind, Peter Laviolette, the experience, I want you to discuss game five and what you expect. 2 o'clock Central Time, national television, Nashville Predators, Dallas Stars, game five at Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah, the playoff experience is what really was the most maddening about game four, even when you look back on it, because the Preds, if they put any seed of doubt in Dallas's mind, they should have won that game because Dallas threw everything they had out of a game three and it didn't work. So, but on the game five Saturday afternoon, matinee has not gone well for Nashville on home ice. I'll say that much. So I don't like that. But again, like you said, 3-1 on home ice under Peter Laviolette in game five. I tell you what, Charlie, I don't have a whole lot of confidence. I got to be honest with you. With everything we've seen all throughout the regular season, as inconsistent as this team has been, every time we think, all right, they're going to put forth a better effort, and they just kind of keep sleepwalking through their games. I don't think Boyle and Simmons are going to be available. I think that's a complete ruse that they're going to be out there, even a possibility of skating in game five Saturday afternoon. So it's going to be this lineup, and quite frankly, I wouldn't be surprised after the first period if things don't go well. That the crowd turns on the Preds, particularly if they get an early power play opportunity and continue to be the power play that we've seen for 86 games this season, then, yeah, I could see some boo birds coming down. If Dallas gets on the board early, you're going to have this crowd completely turn on you if you don't watch out. This is like going to be a Northeast-type crowd if the Preds don't watch out and completely get demoralized by the littlest thing in the first period. So they've got to come out with some hunger, show up like you did in game one, but how about carrying that over the entire game? Prove me wrong. I've said it before. I don't have confidence. You go out there, put forth the effort that we have seen in the past, and you'll win game five, and you can go to Dallas and win in game six like most of us had predicted. But you better be better than you have been over the first four games. This is going to be the last home game of the 2018-2019 season for the Nashville Predators.
This season series between these two teams has been incredibly tight, incredibly close. This will be game number 10 between these two teams combined with the regular season series. The Nashville Predators lead 5-4 throughout the nine that are already played. It's been so close. Mastrodamus, I see why you would be doubting what the Predators can get accomplished in game five, and I also think the confidence of the fan base has been shaken after that performance in Game 4. It all counts just as one loss, and that's the great thing about a seven-game series. Now a best of three, and the Predators do have home ice. After losing Game 1, they needed to go down to Dallas and get that split and get their home ice back. They've now done so. Game 10, a certainty. Game 11, a certainty. Will we see a Game 12? That is still to be determined. This season series, this rivalry is certainly having some fuel put to it this year. It's going to be awesome as we head all the way to the Winter Classic. So Game 5 coming up, and Mastrodamus, I look forward to recapping that and previewing Game 6. We know that will be happening on Monday night in Dallas, so we will be talking about it. You can find Mastrodamus on Twitter at GreekGoalie35, or you can listen to him in this show in the second period all season long. You can also hear him on the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show as a regular contributor in the afternoons here on Nashville Sports Radio. He's a man so far ahead in the future. He's told you everything that's going to happen in Game 5, and he wants the Predators to prove him wrong. He is, of course, Mastrodamus. Thank you so much, my friend.
Charlie, anytime. We'll do it again Monday.
Mastrodamus is the best right there at GreekGoalie35. Interact with him. He's always up for the conversation. Just make sure you bring a strong opinion. Another guy that's always up for the conversation, the interaction, and I love talking pucks with him. He's Brandon Felder, one of the OGs of hockey coverage here on Nashville Sports Radio, and he's on one last ride with the Renegades of Puck as we head on through the NHL playoffs with the Nashville Predators. Brandon Felder, he's up next. The Renegades of Puck all in the trench this morning. I'm your and Captain Crazy Charlie Zani. You're listening to Predneck Nation Radio right here on Nashville Sports Radio.
Hi, this is Pete Weber, the Nashville Predators. You're listening to Predneck Nation Radio.
Welcome back in Predneck Nation Radio. I'm your host and Captain Crazy Charlie Sonia. Remember, as that weather warms up, it's t-shirt season. Check out that Predneck Nation merch, redbubble.com. Search Predneck Nation. That's our online store. Do a fantastic job. Whenever they have discounts, we tweet out the links for those codes. So if you're waiting for an opportunity to save yourself a couple bucks, just follow us on Twitter at Predneck Nation. You'll always know. Predneck Nation, we've sold out, so you can buy in. Support us here on Nashville Sports Radio and support hockey coverage in the mainstream media. Here on Nashville Sports Radio, they're a fantastic partner, and they have always been on the forefront of hockey coverage. How do I know that? Because when I first came to Middle Tennessee, I heard Brandon Felder right here on this very radio station talking Nashville Predators hockey. I believe he was on a remote at A-Game Sportsplex with Paul McCann all the way back in the Hockey Buzz radio days. Here he is on the radio now. Predneck Nation Radio, one of the Renegades of Puck and the OG of hockey coverage on Nashville Sports Radio. You can find him on Twitter at Brandon_Felder. That's a big windup just for me to say. Good morning, Brandon. I hope you're well.
Good morning, Charlie. I am doing well. I'm doing much better than the Preds did in Game 4.
Yes, and let's get right into it, Brandon. Let me just hear the good, the bad, the ugly. You just unload your thoughts from Game 4. We'll pick up the pieces from there, and we'll start talking about some of the other things going on in the overall series.
Well, I mean, the good, I guess, would be that the Predators, if there was ever a game in which you could use 2 days off afterwards, that would be the one. So that part is good. I would say that, you know, UC Saros played very well considering, but also, you know, score affects time. So it's not like Dallas was really out looking for kill shots with Saros out there, but it is that, you know. The bad, I mean, there's a lot of bad. The penalties continue. The nightmare of a power play that's ineffective continues. So for me, I mean, I think we saw a lot of what we had thought perhaps the Predators had learned from. And so the ugly is that this team has not fully learned from their mistakes throughout the regular season. And I think a lot of the reaction that you saw after that particular game was that people felt like that this team caused them to believe in one particular thing. And then suddenly they were reminded that that's not exactly who this team was all throughout the year. And so that got people a little bit worried and a little bit upset.
Well, yeah, they started the season out hot. We all know that. We remember that great start to the year. And they finished hot because that's why they ended up winning the division. Yes, Winnipeg gave them the opportunity to open that door and go through it. But the Nashville Predators were very hot over the final 11 games of the season. And so far, the inconsistency had not reared its ugly head. This has been a highly competitive series where Dallas has better numbers overall. But Brandon, anybody who watched this team over the course of the full 82-game season knew that at some point there was going to be some frustrations and inconsistencies.
Well, yeah, most likely. But I think the other side of it is everybody wondered, okay, have they learned from what happened? Have they figured out what their night-in, night-out skill set is that they can produce? And then even within the playoffs, we've seen, we've talked about the fact that they have to be more disciplined. They have to put in a full 60-minute effort. So we've talked about a couple of those factors. But in general, they had not gotten to the point where they were so far away from what they had done. I think the defensive effort in the first period was just, you know, it was beyond inconsistent. It was, you know, Pecorino should have honestly been pulled after the third goal for being, if it was me coaching. And that was not because of Pecorino. It was because of the way the players were playing in front of him. And sometimes you just have to wake them up in a way that is not normal. And so I think the bigger concern for me is, Charlie, when we go back and we look at last year's playoffs, and we look at what is the reason the Nashville Predators were knocked out of the playoffs. I think most people would look at it and say they were not able to take advantage of their power play. The opponent was able to take advantage of a power play. And they were undisciplined, causing themselves to have too many imbalanced games where suddenly a team like, in this case last year, was Winnipeg, was able to score multiple times and make games feel out of reach in big moments. And that was exactly what happened in game four, and it was a stark reminder. And I think it caused a lot of people to really kind of flash back to last season and think, okay, maybe this team hasn't learned from the previous playoffs, because what we always love to talk about is teams that take playoff experiences and learn from it and grow from it. And I think, for instance, you're looking at Colorado this playoff, and they learned from that first-round series with Nashville last year. And so, you know, it's one of those things that when you don't see that occurring, it really causes concern for the fan base, and it causes people to start to lose a little bit of hope.
Brandon, you mentioned the special teams battle in this series, just being dominated by the Dallas Stars. 4 of 19 on the power play through 4 games in the series, 33 shots on goal, including what we remember the Preds able to kill off, but that incredible 90-second sequence of pressure on the 5-on-3 in this most recent game, 3 out of 6 on the power play, 8 shots on goal. By comparison, the Nashville Predators' power play in the series, 0 for 10. They drew 4 opportunities in game 1, 3 opportunities in game 2, but only 3 opportunities combined since then. 0 for 10 in the series, 16 shots on goal. We did, because of injury, see Colton Sissons return to the power play unit, and I like to see him. He does good work on top of the crease. But, Brandon, we knew the power play worst ranked in the NHL over the course of the regular season, and it's just continued right on. And every time they get a timely power play, I start to let myself think, is this the one? Is this the time? And then I find myself going completely insane, because now 0 for 10 in the series, only 16 shots on net in 10 power play opportunities. It's not been good enough all year. It's certainly not good enough now, and it's probably going to cost somebody a job in the offseason.
Well, it better. I mean, that's the reality. I hate the fact that everybody thinks it's probably, and I hate the fact that they might be right, because at this point, there's no excuse. If you want to be considered a franchise that has raised the bar of expectations and realizes, okay, we've increased ticket prices, we've increased the roster prices, you know, salary has gone up, we're spending more towards the cap, then things like that cannot be acceptable. So somebody has to go. And so, I mean, the reality is it's not going to be Coach Laviolette. Let's be honest. I get so tired of people on the internet saying, oh, it's time to fire Lavi. That's not going to happen. He hasn't lost the room. You don't see this team not responding to Laviolette. You saw it in the final week of the season. They responded to what the coaching staff was doing in terms of that part. But when you're talking about certain coaches have certain tasks for very specific skills, and those skills all season long have been awful, and now you go into the playoffs, and it's awful. And the thing is, I'm like you, Charlie. Every time, I don't know why I do it to myself, but I think maybe this is the power play. And I talk myself out of it by putting out there, like, here comes the power play, not going to work. And just so that hopefully one time it's going to come back to blow up in my face, and people be like, oh, look, the power play worked that time. But no, the reality is when you have demons and you haven't chased out your demons, they're going to haunt you. And in this particular case, all season long, the biggest demon for the Predators is the power play. And here we are in the playoffs, and just like we said all season long on this radio show and others have said throughout media that covers the Predators, They're being haunted by this demon, and it's probably going to cost them a playoff.
And you just watch. Everybody who's screaming about just hire Phil Housley to fix this thing, Barry Trotz is going to end up hiring Phil Housley out there with the New York Islanders as he continues to rebuild his old coaching staff and continues success with the New York Islanders. So it's not as simple, and I agree with you. I hear so much of this chatter and read so much of it on the internet that fire the whole coaching staff, bring back Phil Housley. None of these things are as simple as you would expect. And Brandon, this is one thing. Because you are even keel and because you have seen this franchise from the very beginning, the Nashville Predators lost and lost in a horrible way the other night in Game 4. But what did not happen, they did not lose the Stanley Cup and they did not win the Stanley Cup. It was simply one game out of seven in a series. And now the Nashville Predators, after four, come back tied at two apiece, have home ice advantage, and Game 5, where they've had success on home ice under Coach Peter Laviolette. So, Brandon, take that and give me your even-keeled, keen-eyed analysis moving forward into Game 5, please.
Yeah, well, let me just follow up 1 second on the Phil Housley conversation. Everybody's all about Phil Housley, but if you actually go back and look at the numbers and hat tip to Adam Vingan from The Athletic, the numbers aren't that different on the power play over time. It's maybe a couple percentage points, but it's not drastic. So that's not the end-all, be-all, fix-it solution. So let's not get ourselves too crazy about that one particular hire. You're right. It's a seven-game series, and the reality is, yes, you can have, you know, a clunker, so to speak, in a series. Now, that said, I haven't seen Dallas have a clunker yet. And so is this tonight? Maybe, maybe not. Is an afternoon game when your body's not used to doing those kind of routines, the time that it might happen to a Dallas Stars? Maybe, maybe not. Could happen again to the Preds for all we know. But the reality is you still have three games, potentially three games, but at least two games to go out there and make it where people completely forget about what happened in that Game 4. Much like last season against the Colorado Avalanche, they had a clunker, but they made people completely forget about what happened in that Game 3 against the Avalanche. And so, yeah, it's at the end of the day, it's not going to be the one that costs you everything unless it was a Game 7. And so that's where people have to just realize, okay, if this team has truly learned from prior years, if this team has the core that knows what to do in the playoffs, you will see the very best version of the Nashville Predators in the first period of Game 5.
And this
if it has not happened, then you're going to see what I think could be potential doom going to happen in Game 5.
And this year's tournament has certainly not proven that all you need to do is win your division and be a top seed, and you're guaranteed some sort of easier path. Brandon, you look across the spectrum of the playoff tournament at this point, and as far as division winners in the regular season, Tampa Bay is out, Calgary is down 3-1, and the Nashville Predators and the Washington Capitals find themselves tied at 2 apiece going into Game 5. Truly, this 16-team tournament this year, it's spectacular to watch, and we have no idea who's going to come out on top of this one.
Oh, no, it's every night. You have no clue. Like, for instance, look at last night, and it looked like Winnipeg had really flipped the switch, and they were about to just take this series completely over like they did prior year. And suddenly, boom, 3-2 final after being up 2-0 going in the third period, and the Blues are back in this series as an elimination game. That was a shocker. You know, that's the series that I thought was going to go seven games, and it really might. Then you have, Carolina. Really shocking people once again. Those bunch of jerks sitting there going out there and against the defending Stanley Cup champions and finding ways to tie series in the first round. So that's super interesting. I think Colorado, we talked about how they've learned from prior year, and so they're taking advantage of a Calgary team that just doesn't have as much playoff experience at this point, which is odd to say. Then you go back and you look at Vegas and the Sharks, and I think the Sharks just their goaltending is just been bad all season, if we're honest about it, and that's going to eventually catch up to you. But there's just so many things within the playoffs where little moments, little things can be the difference between you winning a game, and a game can make the difference between swinging the whole emotion of a series. And in particular, Game 5s are very, very important. Nashville's record in Game 5s when they're at home is pretty darn good, but there's no guarantees in this. The only guarantee is if you don't go out there and put forth the effort that's required, have the discipline that you have to have in these type of games, and find a way for your big guys and your big guns and your big money players to get points on the board, which has not really occurred this series. We're not very many people are talking about that. I heard you talk about it, Charlie, on the Greg Pogue and Big Joe show, but not very many people are talking about the fact that Forsberg and Arvidsson have gone silent. So those guys have to wake up and get on the scoring if this team's going to find a way to rally and win two out of the next three.
Brandon, spectacular conversation this morning. I look forward to talking to you about the rest of this series. And before I let you go, just a quick comment. Breaking news. We don't typically have breaking news at this time in the morning in the NHL, but the Detroit Red Wings are announcing Steve Yzerman will be returning to the team that he once captained, of course, played his entire career for, and he will become their new general manager. The Wings have been down since moving over to the East, and of course, they had to go down at some point after two generations of success on the ice. But Steve Yzerman, Brandon, going back home to the Red Wings, and I'm sure it won't be long till their rebuild is very successful.
Yeah, I saw that just before I got on the line with you, and people need to realize this is not Steve Yzerman quitting his Tampa Bay Lightning job. His contract was up, and he intentionally did not re-sign with the Lightning and to be able to basically take over the Detroit Red Wings, which for the first time in many, many, many years means Ken Holland is not the general manager for the Detroit Red Wings. So very interesting move, but one that I think a lot of people have predicted to be coming for, honestly, about two-plus years at this point.
And we see what he did for the Tampa Bay Lightning, building them after their initial Stanley Cup run, where Nashville Predators president Sean Henry was a part of that run. But after that, Tampa Bay had their dip, and Yzerman completely rebuilt that organization into a 62-game winner this season, and now he'll leave them in great health, great players for many years to come. Brandon, look forward to talking about all of these things and much more next time we get a chance to talk when we preview Game 6 on Monday, recapping Game 5, previewing Game 6. The people can find you on Twitter at Brandon_Felder, the OG of hockey coverage here on Nashville Sports Radio. He is Brandon Felder. Thank you so much, my friend. Great talk this morning.
Thank you, Charlie. It was a great talk, and hopefully the next one won't have to be with such angry voices.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm riled up today. And I guess I should be. I've put it behind me. It was an ugly loss, but it was only one loss, and now it's a best-of-three series, and the Nashville Predators have home ice advantage. They have a lot of experience. They have success at home ice. They have a head coach who's been there, done that, and he has gotten plenty of his teams beyond the first round, including getting the Nashville Predators to a Stanley Cup final just two seasons ago. Will the experience be what makes the difference? Will the Predators capture the magic of home ice on Game 5 on national TV at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? It's going to be spectacular. The great hockey war rolls on, and we never know what's coming next. But I can tell you this, Renegades, we'll be here to talk about each and every game day live at 5 on Twitter at Predneck Nation. Give us a like on Facebook. Follow along. Jump in the trench with us each and every game day. I'm your host and Captain Crazy Charlie Sonier. Have a great day, everybody.